Okay, so like imagine this, you're like this young social media star, right? You're, you know, getting all these views and likes, and your parents are super excited, right? They're, you know, signing contracts left and right. But then like years later, you totally regret those images being out there. Like, can you like hit undo on that? You know what I mean? That's kind of what today's deep dive is all about, right? Shields v. Gross. This case that's still like shaping how we think about parental consent and a child's right to privacy and just the whole like ever-changing world of image rights.
It's really fascinating, actually. This case forces us to think about a tough legal question. Can a parent's signature actually override their child's like future autonomy, you know? Especially when it comes to something as personal as their image.
I'm already hooked, and I bet our listeners are too. So let's like rewind the clock. Okay, 1975, we've got Brooke Shields. A child model at the time poses nude for these photos taken by Gary Gross for a publication called Sugar and Spice.
And this is where it all begins, right? The seeds of this legal battle. Shields' mother, she signs consent forms giving Gross unrestricted rights to use the images. So he had total control over where and how those photos could be used. Years pass, right? And then those photos reappear in a French magazine, of all places. And Shields is now a successful actress. She wants them gone,
A
understandably.
French magazine, huh? Well, I guess those photos really did, you know, make a splash. So she sues, right?
Exactly. She tries to stop any further use of the photos.
Okay.
And what's interesting here is not just the legal battle itself, but like the path the case takes through the courts. So the initial trial, court sides with Shields, but only partially.
Okay.
They issue this limited injunction to prevent the photos from being used in what they consider pornographic publications.
So, like a partial win, but not the total victory she was hoping for.
Right, both sides appeal, and that's where things get really interesting. The appellate division, they actually expand the injunction preventing Gross from using the photos for any commercial purposes at all. Okay, you'd think that would be the end of it, right?
Yeah.
But it's not.
Oh, I can feel a plot twist coming. What happened?
The case goes all the way up to the New York Court of Appeals, the highest court in the state, and they reverse the appellate division's ruling,
Wow.
basically siding with the initial trial court's more limited decision.
Wow, that's a lot of back and forth. It sounds like this case really put the legal system to the test.
Oh, absolutely. To understand why the Court of Appeals ruled the way they did, we have to look at the legal arguments at play here. The case really hinged on whether a minor, in this case, Brooke Shields, could legally undo or disaffirm, in legal terms, the consent her mother had given.
Hitting the undo button on a contract, I get it.
Exactly. And a legal basis for all of this comes down to sections 50 and 51 of New York's civil rights law.
Okay.
Think of these sections as the rule book for using someone's image for commercial purposes, you know, laying out all the consent requirements.
Okay, so these sections are like the fine print that no one reads but should.
Pretty much.
So what do they actually say?
Well, the key point is that these sections explicitly allow parents or guardians to give consent on behalf of a minor child. And this is where the majority opinion of the Court of Appeals really digs in. They argue that since the law doesn't specifically give minors a way to overturn their parents' consent, the court can't just create that right out of thin air.
So they're basically saying, like, hey, if lawmakers wanted to include a do-over clause for minors, they would have. It's not our job to rewrite the law.
Exactly. They emphasize the importance of upholding the written law and maintaining stability and certainty in business agreements, you know, especially in industries like entertainment where contracts with child performers are common.
Right. I see that from a legal consistency standpoint. But it still feels a little unfair to the child, doesn't it? It's like their voice isn't being heard.
That's a good point. And that's where the dissenting opinion comes in. One of the judges, Justice Jason, he issued this really passionate dissent arguing that the state has a duty to protect children, especially from potentially exploitative situations. And he believed that this duty to protect should sometimes trump strict legal interpretation.
So he's saying, like, sometimes you have to read between the lines, especially when a child's well-being is at stake.
Exactly. He argued that common law, this broader set of legal principles courts consider, should allow minors to disaffirm agreements that could harm them, even if a parent initially agreed. He even drew parallels to other cases where the law has evolved to reflect changing societal values, like Brown v. Board of Education, where the court relied on broader principles of equality to overturn segregation.
So we have this clash between strict legal interpretation and a more flexible approach where the child's perspective is taken into account. This is getting really interesting.
It is, and this clash has major implications, not just for child performers, but for anyone whose image is used commercially, especially in today's digital age. Yeah, before we go any further, yeah. I think it's really important to remember what Justice Jason was saying in his dissent about the potential for exploitation when a child's future autonomy is basically signed away, even with a parent's good intentions. It raises a big question, right?
Yeah.
What if Brooke Shields hadn't become famous like she did?
Hmm.
What if those photos had shown up somewhere, less reputable? Would the court have still focused on legal certainty?
That's a really good point. Would they have prioritized protecting her image, even if it meant some legal uncertainty? It seems like finding that balance between protecting a child and upholding the law is like walking a tightrope.
It definitely is. And it gets even harder when we think about how much the world has changed since 1981, when this case was decided. You know, the internet, social media images can go viral in seconds.
Right.
The potential for both harm and opportunity is huge now.
Yeah, it's like a whole new world of legal questions, right? Parental consent in the digital age, it's uncharted territory in a lot of ways. I mean, we're talking about parents posting photos and videos of their kids online all the time.
Yeah.
What can those kids do if years later they feel like those images violate their privacy?
Does Shields v. Gross give us any answers there? That's what courts are trying to figure out right now. Shields v. Gross might be a landmark case, but it was decided way before the internet and social media changed how we share images. It's like trying to fit a square peg in a round hole,
Yeah.
Trying to apply old legal principles to a world where digital footprints are forever.
So we're basically dealing with a legal system that's playing catch up with technology. So how do we bridge that gap? Where do we even begin?
Well, first, I think we need to acknowledge that Shields v. Gross might not have all the answers for today's world. We need a new perspective, one that understands how vulnerable children are in the digital age.
Mm.
Maybe we need to rethink if our current laws really protect their rights in this new context.
I agree. So what are some tools or strategies we could use to tackle these new challenges?
There are a few things we could explore. One approach could be to update existing laws to specifically address digital image rights and consent, especially for minors.
So like crafting laws that say what happens when a parent consents to their child's image being used online, and maybe even giving kids a way to take back that consent later on.
Exactly. Like a digital addendum to those legal rule books we talked about.
Mm.
Another option could be to borrow from other areas of law that have already dealt with similar issues.
Okay.
Privacy law or intellectual property law. They might have some concepts we can adapt to protect children's online images.
Mm-hmm.
It's about looking at the big picture and seeing how these legal areas are connected.
So being proactive about safeguarding the rights of children in this constantly changing digital world, and this is where the lawyers of tomorrow come in, right?
Absolutely. For those listening who are on their own legal journeys, I think Shields v. Gross reminds us that the law isn't set in stone. It has to evolve and adapt to new technologies and societal changes.
Right.
So that everyone, especially the most vulnerable among us, is truly protected.
That's a powerful message. Shields v. Gross.
Yeah.
While it focused on a specific situation, it really highlights the bigger challenge of balancing parental rights with a child's right to privacy and self-determination, especially now in the digital age.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This case makes us think critically about how the law can better address the complexities of consent image rights and the lasting impact of our digital footprints.
It's definitely given us and hopefully our listeners a lot to think about. So welcome back to our deep dive into Shields v. Gross. We've talked about the courtroom drama and the different legal opinions and the challenges of the digital age. But now I'm curious, how does this all play out in real life? Are there any cases where we see the legacy of Shields v. Gross today?
Oh, absolutely. Shields v. Gross has had a huge impact, especially as we navigate this world of social media and online content creation. There have been a bunch of cases involving young social media influencers, some still minors whose parents have signed contracts, giving brands or management companies broad rights to use the child's image and likeness. It's like the Brooke Shields scenario, but instead of photo shoots, we're talking about YouTube videos and Instagram posts.
Same situation, different platform. So what happens when these young influencers regret those agreements or feel like their image is being exploited? Do they have any legal options considering Shields v. Gross?
That's the tough part, because Shields v. Gross said parental consent is valid in these situations. Young influencers are often in a tricky spot. They might feel trapped by agreements they never really had a say in.
That's tough. It's like they're stuck in a digital version of those old Hollywood contracts. So what's being done to fix this gap in our legal system? Are there any lawyers out there fighting for change?
Thankfully, yes. There are legal experts pushing for laws that specifically address the rights of minors in online content creation and commercial agreements. They basically want a digital age update to those laws that were at the center of Shields v. Gross.
That makes sense. It's about adapting those legal principles to the challenges of our digital world. So what would this new legal framework look like?
Well, the idea is to find a balance, you know, protecting children while still acknowledging how the digital economy works. This could mean having rules that clarify parental consent in online contexts, maybe even giving minors a way to revoke consent when they reach a certain age. It's about giving them more control over their digital identity.
Sounds like a tough fight, but a worthwhile one. This case really shows how important it is for the law to keep up with technology.
I agree. And, you know, even though it was controversial, Shields v. Gross started an important conversation about parental rights, children's rights, and how consent works in a digital world.
For sure. It's a case that still matters today. It makes us think about these complicated ethical and legal questions that are more relevant now than ever.
Yeah, couldn't agree more.
So as we wrap up this deep dive, what are the key takeaways you want our listeners to remember?
Well, the first thing is parental consent is powerful, but it shouldn't be a free pass for situations that could be exploitative. We need to think about the long-term effects of these decisions, especially when a child's future is on the line.
Okay, and the second takeaway?
The law needs to adapt to the world around us. Cases like Shields v. Gross show us where the law is falling behind, where we need new ideas and solutions to make sure everyone's rights are protected in our increasingly digital lives.
Well said. Any final thoughts for our listeners as they continue their own legal journeys?
I would say approach legal questions with curiosity and critical thinking. Don't just focus on what the law says, but think about the bigger picture, the impact on society, and the potential consequences for people, especially those who might be more vulnerable.
I like that. Question everything, think critically, and always try to make the law more just and fair. That's what makes studying law so interesting.
It really does.
And on that note, we've come to the end of our deep dive into Shields v. Gross. We hope you enjoyed this journey through legal history and what it means for the digital age. Until next time, keep exploring, keep asking questions, and keep those legal minds sharp.